We live in a marketing-saturated world. When we engage with an average of 4,000 to 10,000 marketing messages a day, we become unaware of both the presence of marketing in our lives and the power of marketing to shape our beliefs and behaviors. And for our vulnerable kids who are in the midst of growth and change, marketing is an especially powerful force. What would it look like to disciple our kids into thinking consciously, critically, and Christianly about the thousands of marketing messages they encounter over the course of a day? Can we shape the way they engage with advertising now in ways that will train them to be wise, shrewd, and marketing savvy for the rest of their lives? We'll be talking about some practical ministry tips that parents and youth workers can use to help kids manage marketing on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent-Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Welcome, everyone, to Youth Culture Matters. I'm Jason Sochnek here along with my co-host, Walt Mueller, my guest, Walt Mueller, for today's episode. Walt, good
our
to see you.
Our producer, engineer, hold it together
extraordinaire
guy. Yeah, Chris Wagner's yes. Here as well.
Chris Wagner. I heard that Chris had a rap for us today. He was going to, you know, sing for us and have a little rap for Youth Culture Matters. Is that true?
You must have misheard. That's
okay. Yeah. All right.
I'm not that sure what voices you're hearing in your head there, Jason, but it's a little scary.
Okay. Well, you know why I was thinking that is because we're going to talk today on today's podcast about advertising, and jingles are a part of that. And so I was hoping that maybe Chris was going to give us a jingle, but maybe that's not going to happen.
I do remember our sixth grade jingle that we had to learn about recycling and packaging, and it was awful. It was a play on the word wrap, you know, wrapping.
Oh,
yeah. But would
you please let us know how did that go?
Well, the chorus was rap, rap, rap. Don't let the rapper fool you. There you go. That's my rap for the day.
That was excellent. See, Walt, I told you that we were going to get a rap.
Stick with what you're
doing.
This
is why I don't talk much in the podcast.
Or rap.
Well, excellent. Oh, well, hey, thinking about this, I know we're going to be talking about marketing, and we're going to be talking about how to think Christianly and critically about marketing and advertising. But I want to ask this. Off air, we were talking about some of our favorite advertising characters. So I wanted to know what your favorite advertising character was. Walt, Chris, did you have one?
I did. I actually had several. This is a sign of effective marketing when you can hit the age of 62 and remember jingles and commercials and the characters they use to, you know, market things. When you remember that, it was effective. So do you want to know mine?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And I felt bad for this guy. The Trix Rabbit. Do you remember Trix? Trixer for kids, so I remember that. Mm-hmm. Silly Rabbit, Trixer for kids. So the rabbit was always trying to get Trix, and as I remember it, would want to eat these things and get the spoon right up to his mouth, I guess it was a guy, I don't know, guy or girl rabbit. I never could tell. And would bring the spoon right up and would never get it. Somehow it would always be swiped away, and then you'd hear the line, Silly Rabbit, Trixer for kids. And I actually wanted that rabbit to get some to eat. I mean, if I knew that rabbit, I would have had that rabbit come to my house. I would have poured that rabbit all the bowls of Trix that rabbit wanted. But it was, I remember as a kid, it was, I had pain for the rabbit. I don't know. That's the one I remember. How about you, Chris? Do you have one?
Did you also feel bad for, like, the Wile E. Coyote?
I knew it. I knew you were going there. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Like it. Come on. You can't just one time catch the Roadrunner and don't get an anvil dropped on your head. So, yeah. An Acme anvil.
That's true, an Acme.
Anvil. Anvil, I guess that's how you say it.
He wasn't so much a character, although they would sometimes show him in the ads, but I always liked the Micro Machine guy. If you remember, he was the guy who...
Oh, yeah.
He spoke really
fast. Spoke really fast.
He actually had... He held, like, Guinness Book of World Records for most number of words spoken in, you know, a certain amount of time or whatever. He would always do the Micro Machine ads, the little miniature cars. And
he'd talk real fast.
He would talk really fast. Yep. And everyone... He would actually appear in some of the commercials. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jason, you got... Do you have one? Oh, he's thinking. You don't have one.
Yeah. No, I do have one.
Okay.
You know what? The one that has come up a lot lately is the Kool-Aid guy. Like,
you mean the pitcher?
The pitcher. Yeah. Did he have a name?
I don't know. I remember it was a glass pitcher when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Sure. Hey, Kool-Aid's here. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
his name must have been Kool-Aid.
It must have been. But he'd always smash down walls. Hey! And he'd come through the wall.
Okay.
Yep. I remember that.
But now that I said that, that also sounds like Fat Albert.
Yeah, it's Fat Albert.
Well, he did. He had like a really kind of low voice.
Yes. Yeah.
Kind of gravelly, maybe. Or, yeah.
Yeah. So hey, kids. So
Kool-Aid's here.
I just remember.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. This is all the fact that we can remember these things. This is testimony to the power of marketing, you know, the ability of marketing to get into our heads and make us think and eventually buy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what we're going to be talking about today on this episode. So this is a great segue because while I know that you do quite a bit of work around this, we discuss often about the influence and impact of marketing and advertising. And so maybe real quick, I'm just curious why we find it important to think Christianly about something like marketing and advertising.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of this goes back for me to the history of CPYU when those parents came to me 30-some years ago and said, hey, help us understand our kids. We don't understand our kids. What's shaping them? You know, what are the beliefs they hold? How do these beliefs come out in behaviors? And so one of the aspects of life that I hit on was materialism. And you know, materialism is rooted in our desire to be made whole. And so we create these, or we are attracted to these idols, these false gods that we think will bring us redemption, make us satisfied, make us happy, make us feel whole. That's actually a theological reality. We know that only Jesus can fill the hole in our souls. So when I was talking to them about materialism, I started to make the connect in my head between all the advertisements I had seen growing up, I was seeing as a young adult at the time, and the fact that those marketing messages are meant to push buttons to get us to buy things. And one of the methodologies that's used over and over and over again is, this will make your life better, this will make your life complete. So much of marketing taps into that spiritual emptiness we have and promises fulfillment and wholeness. And so then I started to look more deeply into the world of marketing. I'm not a trained marketer. I know you, Jason. You were involved in marketing, so you know a lot of this. And I started to read marketing textbooks. I started to look at the ads themselves that were targeting kids, work to deconstruct them. I even went a few years ago to a conference called Kid Power, which is a conference. There were probably, I don't know, 300 attendees there from companies all over the country, everything from John Deere to LeapFrog to I don't know who else, but the NFL was there, you know, working to learn how to market their product to kids. And so I sat in on all these seminars that talked about, you know, how to do that, how to make that happen, how to push the buttons. And it really opened up kind of a Pandora's box for me, and I thought, this is big. And if Jesus is to be the Lord of all of life, and he is, that's what he calls us to, then following Jesus means that we integrate our faith into every area of life, that we think Christianly about every area of life, and we think about how God would want us to live on every landscape, every nook and cranny of life, and marketing's part of that. And You know, the researchers haven't really been able to nail this down, Jason, but the thing I keep seeing over and over again as a statistic is that the average person in America right now, the average person, not just teenager, but person, is seeing between 4 to 10,000 marketing messages a day. And when you start to think about that, you go, well, how can that? Yeah, how can that be? But yeah, just think about, we have smartphones. And, you know, when a teenager, as Common Sense Media tells us, is engaged with screens and media for, you know, 13 to 18-year-olds for 9 hours a day, and when they found that parents, adults, are engaged with screens and media for nine hours and 15 minutes a day, you start to realize, man, I'm seeing and hearing a lot, so much so, in fact, that I've become so used to it that I'm not even thinking about it. And that's the scariest part. So,
you know,
I mean,
you're bringing up something that's really important, which is the statistics around how much exposure we have. And you mentioned 9 hours. I remember, gosh, this wasn't even more than 10 years ago. Gosh, 5 years ago. And it was something like 7 hours.
Yeah.
Maybe it was between 5 and 10 years ago. But just in that short window of time, we've gone from 7 hours, somewhere around there, to like 9 hours of exposure.
Yeah, it's increasing. It's increasing.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing, and I say this all the time, because what's happened, what's come out of this, is lots of material that I've written about, lots of material that we've put together for youth workers. You know, I do a seminar for parents and youth workers on marketing and how it's affecting kids and how to get them to think about it. We recently put together an episode of our Just Add Parents, you know, plug and play parent meeting that a youth worker can use. It's video based. It's got all kinds of handouts and things, and all that's designed to help parents understand this and lead their kids, disciple their kids into thinking, as you say, critically and Christianly about marketing. You know, the big thing is, and this is crucial, that we think that advertisements only sell product. And perhaps they're designed to do that because people want to push the buy button on us. They want us to get to that point. And there's all kinds of strategies they employ and all kinds of market research that's been done. It's fascinating on that. But if you're seeing 4 to 10,000 marketing messages a day in a world that is beyond the rational world now, a more of a postmodern or post-Christian world, The stories that ads tell are not so much about, you know, the benefits of the product in terms of how they're made and the quality of the product, but the stories that are being told, and as you deconstruct the ads, you see this, are about life. They sell not just product, but a worldview, beliefs that yield behaviors. And if we start to flip through a magazine or watch television and focus on the commercials or see what pops up on the internet, you know, when we're on our smartphones and we're engaged with social media or whatever, if we really start to pay attention, just what I just said becomes really, really obvious. But it's not until you think about it that that's the case. And here's the issue with that. We're trying to steer our kids into a biblical narrative and a way of looking at and believing and living life that is honoring to God, that where they find their identity in Christ and where they're followers of Jesus, you know, and out of those beliefs flow behaviors, again, that bring honor and glory to God. Marketing tends to promote whatever the cultural narrative is at that moment in time. And so there will be beliefs and behaviors that are assumed, that are taught, and then that kids will assimilate into their lives if they're just looking at it. It's kind of the drip effect of 4 to 10,000 ads a day. It will shape them, and they don't even know it. So what I'm trying to say here is it's not that marketing's bad. You know, marketing can be done well, and we need marketing to learn about things, but we have to understand its influence on us, and we have to push back where marketing's pushing us in a wrong direction. And so that's why I think it's essential that we think about this. Youth workers, you need to understand this and teach this. Parents, the same thing. And it's not just understanding it and teaching it to our kids. It's understanding how it works in our own life, because it does tap into our deepest desires.
That's good. In fact, I want us to take a break, but when we come back from the break, I want to talk about how it works. I want to look at some of the ways that marketing strategizes and then impacts the way that we might engage, act, believe, because these are really important things. But let us take a quick break, and then we'll come back and dive into that. Thanks for listening to Youth Culture Matters. We'll be right back.
Here at CPYU, we continue to create resources designed to help youth workers encourage, educate, and equip parents to nurture their children in the faith as they grow up in a rapidly changing world. To that end, we've just released a new installment in our easy-to-use, plug-and-play series of parent meetings we call Just Add Parents. This new installment is called Raising Marketing Savvy Kids. The meeting is designed to teach parents about the role marketing plays in shaping the beliefs and behaviors of kids, along with how to nurture their kids into thinking critically and Christianly about the 4,000 to 10,000 marketing messages they encounter every day. The meeting includes 3 video teaching segments, along with questions to facilitate lively small group discussion following each segment. Parents will learn how to teach their kids to use our simple 7 ad filtering questions. You can use this Just Add Parents resource during one parent meeting, or you can divide it up over the course of 3 parent meetings or even a weekend retreat for parents. To learn more about this new resource and to order your copy, visit us online at cpyu.org. Youth workers, we've got your parent meeting covered. All you need to do is just add parents.
Thanks again for listening to Youth Culture Matters. Here with Walt Mueller, I'm Jason Soschnick, and we're just diving into some conversation around marketing, its influence, its impact, and how to think Christianly. Walt, before the break, we were opening up some conversation around marketing strategies. And I think that that's something that's really helpful for us to consider, especially as we are trying to teach ourselves how to think Christianly about advertising and marketing. So I'm just curious what some strategies are that you've found in some of your research.
Yeah, actually, when I started to do this, I think I came up with something like just around 50 strategies, and it was way too much, you know, to pass on to people in one sitting, so I've highlighted some of them. I actually wrote about some of these. We have a whole chapter in the book Youth Culture 101 that's on marketing, and I list many of the marketing strategies and explain them. And in recent years, you know, with marketing science, they've developed a lot of new strategies here. I think maybe what I'll do is highlight 3 here, but just to preface that, I want to mention this, that people need to understand that everything in an ad is carefully calculated. It's not just thrown together. There's nothing haphazard. And so marketers are using strategies, which means that we need to understand the strategies. It's sort of like, you know, if you're going to manipulate me, I want to know how you're trying to manipulate me so I can't be manipulated in ways that I shouldn't be manipulated. And since we're talking about basic worldview ideas here and the ability of marketing to sell a worldview, that's where we have to train ourselves and train our kids to be really sharp on this and say, I know what you're doing here. So let me give you the first one. And I'm not going to give you the whole thing here, but I want to highlight this. This is something that is a relatively recent discovery for me. And I do talk about this in the seminar I do for youth workers and parents on marketing. And we even included some extended material on this in that Just Add Parents episode that we put together. And it's called The Pitch. And it's been around for years. And, you know, we talk about pitching product. Marketers will talk about pitching a product. And the way that I really was helped in understanding this was there was a guy named Hugh Rank who in 1982 wrote a book. You can still get a hold of it. I don't know that you can get new copies. They're not publishing it, but I found a used copy of this book. It's called The Pitch, subtitled A Simple 1-2-3-4-5 Way to Understand the Basic Pattern of Persuasion in Advertising. And he says all ads are units of persuasion designed to persuade a target audience to respond in some way, to believe something, or to do something. And one of the things he says is that marketers are benefit promisers. They promise a benefit to benefit seekers. So we're the receivers, and so we're the benefit seekers. And certainly our kids are looking for benefits as well. So if an ad works, those who are the benefit promisers, the producers of the ad, get the benefit of what? A profit, right? and the benefit seekers will receive some kind of pleasure. Now, he goes through this five-step pitch process, which is really fascinating, and it would take too long to talk about here, but here's a number three of the five steps that I think really taps into our kids, and it's a step called desire stimulation. And this is where an ad says to those of us who are watching it, you know, you need this product or service. And what benefit promisers do, Rank says, is tap into four types of desires that benefit seekers have. And these are especially strong in children and teens. So let me give them to you real quickly. This is all part of the pitch, this first strategy I want to explain to you. So the first one, the desire they want to stimulate is the desire for protection. So if we have something good in life, we want to protect it. So for a kid, that could be, you know, a pet, a happy family. You know, as you're getting older, it's a nice vehicle, a significant other, whatever. So whatever you have that you think is good, you want to protect it. So they will try to sell their product to help you protect something you have that's good. The second desire is a desire for relief. Now, think about that with kids and the struggles they face as they go through adolescence. The desire for relief is all about if there's something bad in our lives, we want to get rid of it. So what do kids deal with? Loneliness, pain, insignificance, acne, out-of-style clothes, you know, all the anxieties of life. And so kids are especially susceptible to that. And this tactic, you know, to tap into the desire for relief often leads to exaggeration and even deceit in marketing. You've heard of Revlon Cosmetics, Jason?
I know.
You and I don't use those, but, you know, we've seen the commercials, right? So Charles Revson of Revlon once said, "In the factory, we make the product. In the store, we sell hope." Now, that is a desire for relief right there. So, you know, in medicines, we all the pharmaceutical commercials that are on now, you know, they promise to cure illness or stifle illness, that sort of thing. For men, you know, men, they've often tapped into, you know, men want women to be attracted to them. So they'll market cars and clothes and cologne that promises to make women swarm all over you. So it's, you know, relieve yourself from your loneliness.
There's something that you're tying into as well, just in these aspects of the pitch that plays out in political ads. I mean, we're we just came through that, and so we're coming out of the season, and I'm just thinking these are the very things that you see in a political ad, that you hear, that you listen to. So even as an adult, we can still be exposed to it. And just thinking through, like, its influence and just even talking about this, I'm thinking, these are the very things I heard.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, see, once you see this happening and how they're doing this in marketing, it's like your eyes are open to this new world you never knew existed before, and it helps us push back. We get to see what they're doing. So those are, you know, desire for protection, desire for relief. Two more here in desire stimulation in the pitch. One is the desire for acquisition. If there's something we don't have, we want it. We want to acquire it. And boy, this really taps into, you know, our emptiness and materialism. And, you know, you think about the Ten Commandments and coveting, and the opposite of that is, you know, being so generous with what we have in Christian community and to the world that's in need. And it's just get. And then the last one after the desire for acquisition is the desire for prevention. If there's something bad out there in the world that we don't have, we don't want to get it. We want to avoid it. So again, this could be something like, man, I see my friends being lonely. I see my friends with bad complexions. I see my friends wearing out of style clothes. So the desire for prevention. So marketers play into all those things. So I would say, you know, youth workers, parents, you need to learn about the pitch and how that works and talk to your kids about it. And again, there's much more to that than what I've given you there. So you know,
that's good.
Actually, you know, as I'm talking about this, I would love for folks. I'm marketing right now, right? Because I want folks to get a hold of this parent meeting that we put together where we unpack this. So hopefully, I'm stimulating your desires for that. Hey, and by the way, this is where marketing's not bad, because when it's done with honesty and with integrity, we give honor and glory to God. And man, we want our kids to go into marketing. We want kids who go into that as a career, and because it's such a big business, and we want them to, you know, be worshipful by bringing honor and glory to God through the way they construct messages, the methodologies and strategies they use, and the types of ads they put out there. Let me give you two more. Go ahead.
Yeah, that'd be great. Well, even as before you just dive into those, I'm just thinking these are great things. If you're a youth worker, a youth pastor, a parent, like these are strategies that you can even implement as you are doing it in a joyful, worshipful presence where you're wanting to glorify the Lord with this. I think that these are things that actually allow for us to maybe better share or better think through how we're sharing our messages with our own kids.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, so it's all about the purpose, the intent. So
yeah, let's be honest in our communication.
Yes. Okay. So two more, what's the second one?
Personalized marketing. And this is rather new. So here's an example of this, you know, and everybody has this happen. Yesterday we got the mail in at our house and there was a large postcard that was in the mail. It was two-sided. It was glossy. It was full color. And when I looked at it, I kind of did a double take. Now, I've gotten enough of these that it doesn't shock me anymore. But it's sort of this, you know, how did they know kind of thing. What they were doing was they had created pictures of these personalized beer mugs that say Mueller's Pub on it. And I could order these beer mugs, you know, that say Mueller's Pub. I've got.
Wait, you have a pub?
No, I don't. I don't even drink beer. I'm not a beer drinker. But it's fascinating to me. You know, so they know
so
where I live.
So is this an example of personalized marketing gone wrong or personalized marketing done well?
Well, it's gone wrong because I'm not buying the doggone things. But the same company, I think, has sent me things. Like I remember getting something from them, you know, that was sweatshirts that it said Mueller. And it had some sort of little message like House of Mueller or you know, something like that. So it's all this. And I'm sure my neighbors are getting it with their last names on it, as are the people who are listening. So that's an example of personalized marketing. Now, here's the thing with our kids. 95%, the latest research says 95% of our teens have access to a smartphone, and 45% of teens say they're online almost constantly. So what's happening is marketers are doing everything they can to reach kids there. We try to reach kids where they're at. And they'll just collect data. There's constant data mining and data collection. So, for example, you know, with me, obviously I'm not a kid, but this is a great example. So about a year ago, I had to replace my suitcase, and I know what I want because I travel a lot, a black 22-inch rolling suitcase with a slot that opens up where I could put a jacket in there if I need to take a jacket. It's not going to get wrinkled, you know, a suit roller, I guess they call it. And I knew the brand that I wanted. So I thought of this while I was sitting at my desk here in the office. Oh, I'll take 5 minutes just to see, you know, Google Shopping, whatever. And I type it in, you know, the brand of the suitcase, the size, the color, the whole thing. 5 minutes, looked at a couple, went back to work. Probably 2 hours later, I open up my computer. I go on Facebook. And what pops up on the side but an ad, a personalized ad, for the suitcase. That's not by coincidence. They were data mining. They know where I am. And I'm still getting ads a year later, you know, for these suitcases. And this happens all the time. Whatever it is you're looking for, things are, you know, tailored to who you are. So, and kids are primary targets for this. Because you know what, here's what happens. Their behavior is tracked. Marketers identify what kids perceive their needs to be. And then how these needs can be best satisfied. Now, of course, best means you're selling them something. And, you know, the kids are especially vulnerable to this because they want to be known. They want to feel like they're important. They want to feel like, you know, someone likes them and is treating them well and making them feel special. So that's what personalized marketing is. So we need to look for that. Let me give you the last one real quick here, and this is neuromarketing.
Please.
And this is especially frightening to me. I'll tell you a story from a few years ago. I was speaking out in Michigan. Man came to me during the break. I had mentioned a market research company during my talk, and he came up and said he was working for that particular market research company. And he said, sometimes I feel like I've sold my soul to the devil. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, I just came back from the UK where I was checking up on some research some of our folks are doing over there on how to manipulate the human brain through marketing to get people addicted to products. And that was one of the first times I heard about neuromarketing. It's an emerging field that applies neuropsychology to marketing research, looking for how to tap into, you know, and trigger sensory, motor, cognitive, and affective responses to marketing stimuli. It's mind games in order to sell. And one of the great examples of this is using smell to trigger purchasing in retail establishments. There's an entire science of scent out there in marketing that studies what draws people into stores, what keeps them in stores, and what increases their willingness, scent-wise, to spend more money. They're using smell to manipulate the limbic system. So just two examples of this, and we can take a break. Nike, there was a study Nike did showing that adding carefully curated scents to their store environment increased intent to purchase by 80%. Another story that I read about this was a gas station that had a mini mart attached to it, and they started to pump in the smell of coffee in an effort to sell coffee. And what happened when they started to pump the scent in was the coffee sales increased by 300%. And look, if you've walked by Abercrombie and Fitch in the mall, and I know many adults who walk by, they get blasted by the odor. They can't stand it. But Abercrombie and Fitch actually uses a strategy called billboard scents, throwing smells out there that are as in your face as a billboard. And their market research says that the smells you smell that you don't like are actually embraced by and something that the young demographic they're trying to reach is in tune with. So, again, be aware of all these strategies.
Gosh, that's that third one I've never really thought much about, but when you walk through the mall, I mean, think about how many teens and adolescents are walking through the mall. I've always, you know, it sits in your subconscious, but it just gets thrown to the very front as you're sharing this, because I just walking in front of different stores, just the smells and the scents, and then even restaurants and how they throw off some of their own scent. And there's a lot of, I've seen that.
Well, I'm just going to mention this. I know we need to take a break, but let me mention this. You talked about the mall. Think about what you're, next time you're in a mall, look at what you're walking on. I mean, not your feet or your shoes, but the research shows that if you're on a hard surface, people tend to walk faster on hard surfaces. That's the concourse, right? They walk more slowly on carpeted surfaces.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and by the way, apps are now targeting people as well. You go into a particular store, if you have the app loaded, it will actually change the prices based on your buying habits. When you walk up to a particular rack, it'll tell you what the price of the thing is based on what you've spent before and your buying habits. It's crazy when you think about it.
Oh, it's super crazy. That's why I was just going to say that very point with regards to your second point, because of how just – the interlinking aspect of marketing today between social media, websites, your phone, your apps—we live in a totally different world than ever before. Even when I was in advertising and marketing, we did not have these tools available to us. We dreamed of them, but we didn't. So, I'm so glad we're aware of them. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we will come back. And I think there's going to be an important conversation just around responses, but we're going to take a moment here to take a break, and we'll be right back. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about one of our best-kept resource secrets here at CPYU. For the last 14 years, we've produced a one-minute daily radio spot called Youth Culture Today that's carried on over 800 radio stations in North America, and which can be listened to through our online home at cpyu.org. Recently, we've relaunched, rebooted, and rebranded Youth Culture Today so that it will reach more parents and youth workers with timely and practical tips on how to help kids navigate the challenges and opportunities of living in today's world. We encourage you to visit our homepage at cpyu.org to experience a one-minute daily dose of youth culture that will better prepare you to reach the kids you know and love. Or search for Youth Culture Today on your favorite podcast platform. Youth Culture Today is one more free resource we've created to help and support you as youth workers and parents.
Welcome back. Thanks for being with us here on Youth Culture Matters. We are diving into conversations around raising up and thinking Christianly about marketing and advertising. And so, Walt, we've walked through and talked about why this is important. We've looked at some strategies. I just want to know some responses, because I think sometimes our responses can be some of the most important things that we can do when engaging this. So, yeah, what would be some responses that we could have to this?
Well, I know we have limited time, so let me just give you a couple. And we've got a boatload of responses that we've listed elsewhere and that you can access. But two of the most important. One would be to understand what the yearning is really for and answer the yearning. Because no product is going to fulfill us. No product is going to make our life complete. Ultimately, we know that it's only the gospel that answers our deepest needs. And so what we want to do is constantly be proclaiming the gospel to kids so that they see that they're human beings made in the image of God for a relationship with God, and that they need to find their identity first and foremost in Jesus Christ. He is the only one. He is the only thing, if I can say it that way, because we think a lot about things in our world that will fulfill us. He's the only one that will fulfill. And that's a message we need to hear as well, Jason, as parents, because much of our living, many of our habits point to the fact that while we may say that's the case, we really don't believe it. You know, we're living otherwise. We're trying to pull things together or look for something that will make us complete. We're just not there. And I think, too, that we need to realize that once we come to faith in Jesus Christ, we become adopted sons and daughters. We still struggle with sin. So those yearnings will still exist, and we will still be susceptible to the marketing. So that's a basic first step that I think is foundational. But then the second step I would suggest here, and this is the one I'll give you, to turn the corner here and get very practical, is to constantly be working to deconstruct the ads and filter the ads through a series of questions. And I've thought pretty long and hard about what these questions should be and you know, how can they become second nature? In other words, we might practice these with kids. We might practice them ourselves, you know, filtering ads through it, through these seven questions. But I think these are the most basic. And I think if we practice this in our youth groups and in our homes, and even by ourselves as we're driving, you know, looking at a billboard or listening to an ad, it will become second nature. So let me give you the seven questions. And I think we actually have a list of multiple questions, but we have seven basic questions that I think are the minimal amount that will get to the core of what's happening in an ad and get us thinking critically and Christianly. So here they are, all right? And this is a great way to teach kids how to think critically and Christianly, not just about advertising, but all of life. So we call them the Simple Seven, and we'll include a link to them on our page. You know, at cpyu.org, go to the podcast page, you'll see this. So the first one is this. You start with simple question, what product is this ad selling? That may actually be a little more difficult to answer than you think, because many times they don't even tell you what the product is. You're just looking at maybe an icon and, for a company, and if we've been marketed too well, you'll see the icon and know what the product is. But the ad's maybe two pages, if you're talking about a print ad, telling the story. So you want to start with that. What is the product they're trying to sell me? If there's an exchange of money here, what am I going to receive? The second question is this. What, besides the product, does this ad sell? So I said that the greatest power of marketing is not to sell product, but to sell a worldview. So in answering this question, taking this second step, you're trying to find out what are the ideas, the lifestyles, the beliefs, the behaviors, the worldview that's being communicated. And these things are sometimes explicit and easy to see. Sometimes it takes a little looking because they're implicit, and you've got to work hard to look deeply. And to do this in a group, to have kids do this in a group together is a great exercise, and, you know, they benefit from chatting with each other. Three, you want to look for what's the bait, what's the hook, what's the promise. I mean, what are the strategies that they're using here to get me to notice this hook? What's the bait that's on the hook? And what's the promise this ad is making to try to get me hooked? And that's where we go to number four, because number four springs off of that word promise, and we need to complete this sentence. It's not so much a question, but it's more of a fill in the blank. And this is where you say to yourself, okay, this ad tells me, if I use, and then the blank, you know, fill in the name of the product, then this will happen. So it's kind of cause and effect, or use and result. So you're trying to connect the dots. And really what you're doing is you're getting into the mind of the marketer here to see what they know about you and what your yearnings are and what they're promising. Now, once we figure that out, there's three more steps. So 5, 6, and 7. So number 5 is ask this question. Does this ad tell the truth? Does it tell truths? What truth? What truths? And how is it telling this truth or these truths? And this is where we become, you know, people who are shrewd in knowing God's word and bringing the light of God's word to bear on the messages that exist. So, you know, it does this reflect things that are good, true, right, and honorable according to the biblical narrative, or does it reflect things that are not good, true, right, and honorable, and it reflects more the cultural narrative? And then the next question, number 6, is does the ad tell a lie or lies? And you're identifying the untruths that are being told. What are those lies? How is it telling the lies? And then the last step is this, and this is where it becomes very practical. This is more of an action step. How does this ad and its messages agree or disagree with commonly held standards, or actually with biblical truth? How does it agree or disagree with biblical truth? And then what does that mean for me? What then does that mean for me? So we're taking it to the application point. We're trying to get kids to see, you know, maybe there's some products I'm not going to buy because they're not going to fulfill, or maybe there's companies I'm not going to support because they try to deceive me. You know, those could be some of the options there. So those are questions that we all need to be asking of the marketing we see. And as I said before, if we start to practice those regularly, you know, our habits form us. If we start to practice those regularly with our kids, we are discipling them. We are taking them deeper in their faith, and we're teaching them a second nature skill that will serve them well for the rest of their lives.
So good. You know, what I love about these questions is that they're questions that we can even teach ourselves, but more importantly, our youth. Like if you're a youth pastor, these are great questions to even ask about messages that are being shared, and trying to think critically of their faith and engage what they're hearing and what they're seeing, and how to go deeper, right? Like that's our goal, that's our call, that's our desire. So I deeply love each of these responses. These questions are really good.
Yeah, and can I say, you know, we've been putting these out there long enough that we've had loads of feedback from youth workers who have used these, and from parents who have used these, where they've said this is so helpful. And kids don't push back on doing this, because this is an activity. It's an engagement. They get to see how faith applies to life. Faith isn't just something that's abstract out there. It becomes very real and applicable when they start to do this.
Okay, so something we always do in the podcast, what would you say are some resources, some things that you would throw out there for our listeners?
Yeah, I think we'll list, when we're done here, I'm going to give Chris a list of books and resources. I've got a few that would be very helpful. I would say to youth workers, track with some of the marketing sites. You can Google those, and some of the market research, you know, some of the marketing texts that are coming out. And I'm not well versed off the top of my head here in what I would send you to now, but there are some books that are helpful. One that I think of right away is we have a friend named Sam Van Emmon who's written a book called On Earth as It Is in Advertising. And that's one that we would recommend highly, On Earth as It Is in Advertising by Sam Van Emmon. And also, you know, just find out where kids are spending their time, you know, what they're reading, what they're listening to, what they're watching, and grab those media outlets and look at the ads. So, you know, record ads that you can evaluate, print ads, put them in front of kids. So collect those. There are websites out there. If you Google image search new ads, old ads, there's, you know, data banks of ads. I mean, you can find ads all the time. We don't need to link to those, but they're helpful as well. I did mention before there was a whole chapter in the book Youth Culture 101 that I wrote, which talks about marketing and advertising and offers some insights into many, many, many more strategies, and then many, many more responses. And then we really need to train parents in this. And so, you know, we can either come and do this on site and spend a day with your parents teaching them how to do this. You could even bring the students in for this. I think it would lend itself well to this and be a fun interactive experience. I'd love to come to your church to do this. And the other thing is our parents meeting. We just released an episode of Just Ed Parents that's all about raising market savvy kids. And youth workers, this is it's the topic is raising marketing savvy kids, and it's a ready to use parent meeting. We'll include a link to that as well. And you can do that over the course of one parent meeting or three parent meetings, however you choose to do it. There's lots of content in there, video content and teaching and other resources, printable resources as well. Very affordable way to teach and educate parents.
For sure. They're great. So, yeah, if you haven't already checked it out, please do so. I think that last resource you mentioned is a really good one. Well, thank you. This has been really good, Walt. I appreciate I love these opportunities where we just get to be able to have a conversation. I know that we often have guests, but this was, I think, very fruitful. So, well, we appreciate you, the listener, for taking your time to listen and engage, and hopefully you'll find something useful that you're able to take and use as your continuing life. So thank you for listening. And we'll see you on the next podcast.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent-Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.